but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Our next guest, former football head coach, football assistant coach, football player at Washington, and a guy who you have seen both on the Pac-12 Network and the CW broadcast, Nigel Burton, joining us live via satellite. Nigel Burton, where are you today?
Well, I was just, should I not say I was just having a beer with a buddy after work?
You can say that.
All right. Well, yeah. I was having a beer with my buddy Mike Burns, after work, and I said, hey, I gotta slide off because my buddy John thinks I know a little something about sports, and so I should probably step out of here.
What kind of beer drinker are you? What do you order? What's your order?
You know what? I actually was never a beer drinker. I just did not like a beer. And this past summer, my wife and I built this like outdoor. Somehow it got called the Pavilion. I don't know. I did not come up with this name. She didn't. Somebody did. And so basically our friends come over every Sunday and we watch Sunday, like NFL Sunday Ticket. And I started drinking beer because I was like, it was the thing that everybody kept bringing over. And so I transitioned to start drinking beer. So I'm not a hoppy guy. I can't do that.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty simple. I'm a Bud Light, Coors Light, you know, Modelo. Like that's, you know, that's my deal. Maybe a Pilsner, you know, a little blonde, a little Kolsch if I want to feel exotic. You know, there you go.
All right. Nigel Burton with us. Exotic as ever. Oregon State and Washington State, let's start with the Cougars. Jimmy Rogers and the Cougars, I think, have played very respectably, especially in a couple games on the road that, you know, nobody expected them to be in. They were good losses even this season. They are 4-4. They look like a team that could win 7 games maybe. And tell me what you see at Washington State.
I think every coach, if you ask them, says, you know what we want to do this year? Like, you know, I mean, there'll be the occasional, hey, our goal is to win a national championship, right? Most players tell you that. I bet you Dan Lanning wouldn't even say that. But most coaches just want to get better week after week. And I would argue there's not a team in America that has gotten better week after week more than the Washington State Cougs. Like, watching them in person against Idaho, I was like, they might not win a game this year other than this one. Like, they should not even have beaten Idaho. And then to watch them, you know, 5-6 weeks later go toe-to-toe with Ole Miss and should have beaten Virginia and then absolutely dismantle Toledo, who is a good football team. Do not knock the Toledo Rockets. Like, they got some guys who will play on Sundays. Has just been a work of art, I think, by Jimmy Rogers. They have improved incredibly really on every aspect of their game, special teams, defensively, and offensively.
For the Cougars to have a successful season, given where they are right now, bowl eligibility seems to me to be the line, maybe the line of demarcation for Jimmy Rogers. But what do you see as Washington State looking back and going, hey, it was a successful year? Because you're right, they have improved, but they're now sitting in a position where like a 6-7-8 win season is out there for them.
Yeah, no question. I wouldn't argue that. I would say this, and I know this is going to sound weird. Like, I think I've been the guy over the years who said the weirdest stuff. Like, I remember coming on your show and arguing that, like, Oregon State fans and Washington fans need to root for Oregon, and, you know, da-da-da. And, you know, people would think I was crazy, and I try to explain, like, why, right? I think for Oregon State, this is going to sound really strange, especially coming from me, Pac-12 lifer, it might have been the best thing that ever happened to them was having the league blow up. Because when you are trying to fight uphill battles against programs that have 2, 3, 4, 5, 10x more than you, in Oregon and Washington and USC, and just go down the line, and now they're in a league that is going to be considered to be the cream of the G5, I guess G6, right? Conferences, right? It'll be better than, it'll be like 1B off of the Power 4. It's kind of in this limbo between Power 4 and Group of 5 schools. If you win that conference, you're more than likely going to get a CFP invitation. When could Oregon State and Washington State in the playoff era, not the BCS era, definitely not the go before that era, when could they go into a season saying, if we win the league and we legitimately have a chance to win the league, we'll likely find ourselves in the playoff? Like, that wasn't a real thing. And now it's going to be a real thing when you've got Boise and Fresno and San Diego State and all these programs that have tradition and have won games, and because of the new playoff rules, they will find themselves, you know, knocking on the doorstep, you know, if they can finish it off. I think it's a great situation for them to be in, considering 2 years ago it looked like a dire situation.
Yeah, and I think you might be able to, at the end, look at Washington and go, hey, did Washington State get to the playoff more frequently than Washington? Because Washington's got to climb over 5 or 6 teams in the Big Ten to even get there. Washington State has to climb over Boise State and San Diego State and Oregon State, probably, like maybe Colorado State or somebody like that, Fresno State, to get there. It's a little easier climb. Nigel Burton with us, the CW. Oregon State, look, they start 0-7. Trent Bray gets fired. He did that halftime interview with you where he comes off the field and he drops the F-bomb. Let's go back to that moment, because I think that was a pivotal moment in sort of the Bray era. What was that like for you to be interviewing a guy and you go, and you've been a head coach, you know, you can't really talk like that.
You know, it was funny because when it happened, I guess it was afterwards, I was talking to my son, and you know, my son is playing at Washington. So, you know, your comment that Washington State, I would agree that they have an easier run to get to the CFP. I don't know that they'll get there more than Washington. I think Washington has a chance to get there this year if they win out. And legitimately, you could argue, you know, that it could come down to a home game against Oregon. But anyway, he called me afterwards, and he's like, Dad, you know, you're all over Twitter and all these things. And he goes, he was talking to you like you were just friends.
Yes.
Like he forgot about the camera. And I said, you know, that's actually kind of a compliment for what I do now. Because I think that's why a lot of these networks, you know, put me in those positions, because sometimes a coach will forget, because I've known Trent since he was 19 years old. I've known Kalani Sitake. I know Kalen DeBoer. Like, I still text with those guys. Like, you know these guys so well that every now and again they'll forget the camera's on and they think they're just kind of talking to you as a friend. And, you know, when he said it, I was like, as a buddy, I was like, yeah, you're right. Yeah, that is the case. But I also was like, I don't know if you noticed these other two guys standing here, but maybe we shouldn't have done that, you know. So it was, it was just one of those situations where, you feel good in that there was a level of comfort that he could be honest with you, but you also know that there's going to be some blowback, and I don't think he caught a whole lot. I think people understood his frustration. And he wasn't wrong.
They're 1-7 now. They've got an interim coach. Is that a difficult prep for Jimmy Rogers in Washington State, especially given the quarterback conundrum? And you know, who are they going to play? Are they going to play both guys? Are they going to play one guy? How tricky is that to game plan for?
I don't think it's going to be a big deal, because I think Jimmy's still building his culture, and what he's trying to get those guys to understand, it doesn't really matter who the heck we play with. I just showed you, it doesn't matter if we're playing Toledo, it didn't matter if we were playing Ole Miss. It really is just about how we execute. And the thing that I really love about Jimmy Rogers' team, they don't have self-inflicted wounds. they really have done a nice job. You don't see a lot of procedural penalties. They don't jump off sides. They don't have late hits. They don't have things that are just those, like, head, like, what are you doing type of penalties, right? Those forehead slappers. I think the biggest thing that has really stymied Oregon State this season is they can't get out of their own way. You know, we taped our show today for our CW show that we have on Fridays and Saturdays leading into college football games on the CW. And I just, like, part of me is a little irritated on how people talk about Oregon State, because realistically, it's a 4-3 team who found a way to be 1-7. Like, they had no business losing to App State. They had no business losing to Fresno State. And they had no business losing to Houston. And Houston's a 4-6, what are they, 5-2 or something like that? Like, they have a chance to win their conference. And they browbeat Houston, and they just found a way in the end to kind of screw it up. So, like, kind of talking about them like they're the sisters of the poor is just kind of irritating to me, because they're not. Like, they just got to get out of their own way. But if I'm Jimmy Rogers, I'm not concerned about them. I'm just concerned about, like, we got to be able to run the football. We got to make sure that defensively we stop the run. And then we got to make sure I'm trying to coin this term, like, you know, you got bad Zevi Ekhouse and good Zevi Ekhouse. And good Zevi Ekhouse has been, luckily, has shown up more than bad Zevi. But bad Zevi, every now and again, rears his head and, like, will throw a ball into double coverage and just kind of throw a big old loop-de-loop. And those are the things that I think, if I'm Jimmy Rogers, I'm like, all right, that stuff has got to end. Because we can be a really good football team and really have a crazy good season and leading into another season where people will start talking about us if bad Zevi goes away.
You talk about bad Zevi and good Zevi. I mean, what does that have to do with in your mind? Is that protection? Is it him? Is it, have to do more with the opponent? What markers do you see?
It has to be. There's times when Zevi's reckless with the football. And when you're the guy who touches the ball every play, you just can't be reckless with the football. You can't throw the ball into, you know, double coverage. You can't throw the ball up on 50-50 balls with guys who haven't shown that they can win 50-50 balls. Like, you just have to protect the football. It's okay to throw the ball in the dirt. It's okay to throw the ball away. You know, you don't have to try to, you know, I'm getting sacked. I'm just going to throw it up and see what happens, you know. And I know those conversations are happening. And so, you know, Zevi has really saved this season for the Cougs. You know, I don't think they're in the same position if he's not playing for them. But if he doesn't rein that in, then there's going to be a moment that they're going to find themselves either in a dogfight they shouldn't be in, or they're going to find themselves on the backside of a loss that they shouldn't have had if he doesn't kind of rein in that risky behavior with the football. And, again, he has played lights-out football, and I don't want to sit here and act like that's the thing. But this team has improved so much that if he just kind of is willing to take an L, you know, lose the battle, win the war, if he's willing to do that, they will be talking about this team as a possible playoff team next season. I promise you. It'll be a realistic thing, because if they can keep their team together, you know how NIL and portals and all that kind of stuff works, but this is a team that plays hard, doesn't make mistakes, and has some playmakers. And that is a recipe for success in college football now.
Nigel, you're a defensive guy. Put yourself in the shoes of Oregon State. They'd like to see bad Zevi, right? How do you sort of conjure up bad Zevi if you're a defensive coordinator?
Well, it's tough. They've really had a hard time stopping the run. And, one thing that I hate seeing, and listen, you know, to your listeners that love football, they watch football, right? And they'll see these big gash runs. I would argue if more times than not, you'll watch linebackers being really slow to react and patient. You know, I remember when I started coaching high school football when my son was going through, and I was trying to explain to him, like, listen, if you do this job correctly, like, the other team will think you're blitzing every down because you're running through your gap so fast that they'll think you're blitzing. And then they started to do it, and they would hear the other team being like, hey, you gotta stop that linebacker blitz, right? If I'm Oregon State, like, it has to look that way. Like, I just think they've been overly patient, I'll be positive and use that word, teams showing up. And so what ends up happening is you create these double team problems on your D linemen, and they just don't have, you know, there's no Vita Veas. There's no, I mean, you go back in the day, whether you're talking the Slade Norrises and the Victor Butlers and the Stephen Paez, like those guys are not there. So they can't withstand these double teams that are happening because the linebackers aren't showing up fast enough. And so, like, I'm got to stop the run. I have to do that first. And then if I can get in some situations where I can bring a little pressure, Zebby's just shown every now and again to just kind of throw it up. And then I got to tell guys they got to make a play. And so, you know, for Oregon State, they've struggled to stop the run. And then, unfortunately, they've also struggled with the deep ball. So they're going to have to shore those two things up. And if you do those, the two things in this game, I think you've got, and if you watch Washington State, like they don't have a bunch of 4-2-5 speed burners out there that can take you deep. So you just got to be sound, you know. And if you do those things, I think you have a great chance.
Nigel Burton with us. You can catch him on the CW as an analyst and sideline reporter and halftime reporter. Nigel, Oregon, I want to pivot a little bit to the Ducks. They were feeling really good after that win against Penn State. Can't really control your schedule, but they get beat by Indiana. Do you have concerns about Oregon? Or is this just kind of the new world where we've got a long season and there's going to be some flow to the season, some ups and downs?
Yeah, there's going to be flow. But what's going to happen is really good programs are going to watch, like, where are the games you struggled? And so they're going to watch Wisconsin, they're going to watch Indiana, and they're going to just try to mimic it. And there's two things that kind of stick out to me is, you know, one, I don't know how healthy Dante Moore is. And when he is put under pressure, he just seems a little bit more uncomfortable than the average bear. And so I've seen a couple issues at the left tackle position. And so if I'm going against the Ducks, I got to find a way to, again, slow the run game down and then get pressure on him. And what's been interesting is they got a ton of talent at receiver, but they also have a lot of youth. And when you're DeCorian Moore, when you're those guys who have just been used to just running by, you know, South Lake Carroll and all these different guys, you know, the next level, guys are going to grab you. And guys are as big as you. And guys can run with you. And so they haven't really, the receivers aren't separating the way in which I think Oregon fans have seen. I mean, you go back to the lone touchdown against Indiana, that was a blown coverage. Otherwise, like, you didn't see guys finding ways to create space. You know, Wisconsin, you didn't find – there weren't a whole lot of guys just running away from people, finding ways to win one-on-one. So, like, to me, you know, I'm going to spend this bye week telling the scout team, like, you can grab him as much as you want, and he's got to find a way to get off of it because that's what's happening. And that's what they're going to allow. You get in the playoff, they're not going to call whoever you're playing. They're not going to call Ohio State for holding. I mean, they might call it once or twice. They're not going to call it all game. So you're going to have to find a way to get off this stuff. And I think that's just part of the learning curve for guys like DeCorian and some of their young receivers.
Nigel Burton is with us. Big Sky Conference has fined Sacramento State football coach Brennan Marion. He criticized the officiating in their loss to Montana. You've been a head coach. You've been a head coach in that conference. That is a delicate dance. How did you handle that when you felt like you got done dirty, but you can't talk about it?
I never talked about it because I didn't make enough money at Portland State. But my favorite story, I had a guy, my kid, I never was able to go to any of those parent-teacher conferences because I was coaching. So I get done coaching, I go to the deal, and I'm sitting there, and the guy looks at me and says, hey, after about 5 minutes, like, you don't recognize me, do you? I'm like, yeah, I recognize you. I'm like, playground. You know, I've seen you. I picked the kid up. He's like, no. He goes, I was a Big Sky ref for like 3 years. I was like, oh, okay. I go, did I do anything bad? He goes, no. He goes, you said the funniest thing to me ever. He said, one time, you called me over, and you put your arm around me. And he said, you see up there? You see those boxes up there in the stadium? My wife and my kids are up there. And I'll tell you, it's that box right there. And I just need you to go up there and explain to them why I got fired because of the crappy calls you've been making all day. And so, yeah, that was kind of my way of, like, making him laugh, but also make him understand I didn't appreciate how this thing was going.
Yeah, tactful.
And, I didn't make enough money at Portland State to be, you know, yapping during the post-game press conferences or any of that stuff. So, you know, I had a little self-control. There was that, what do they call it, the cooling-off period? I needed that several times.
Yeah, there you go. Nigel Burton, you're the best. I will see you down the road. I'll see you on the sideline. There he goes from the CW, Nigel Burton. I want you to leave it here. We got some parting thoughts on today's show. Stick around.